Coming up on Lockdown Brewers, it's Mailbag Monday. Love the interaction as usual. Some very insightful and thought-provoking questions. Some fun ones as well, so let's get to it. This is Lockdown Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, and welcome back, all you cheesers, to Locked On Brewers, brought to you by Locked On Podcast Network, talking about your favorite teams every day. I am Vinny Rotino, and you can follow me on Twitter at Vinny Rotino. And you can also check me out on the pre- and post-game show during the season for Bally Sports Wisconsin. And joining me today, of course, as always, is Dom Catronio, and you can follow him at Dom underscore Catronio. Also, make sure you follow Locked On Brewers at Lockdown Brewers on Twitter and subscribe to Lockdown Brewers podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for making Lockdown Brewers your first listen every day. We post episodes usually daily during the season, but right now 3 days a week. Monday through Friday is when we're going to be posting those three episodes. And we are free and available on all platforms. So coming to you plausibly live from Maggie's basement. And of course, if you're in the market, make sure you give Maggie a follow at Maggie Rotino. And also make sure, I don't think that's her handle, actually, on Instagram. Anyway, you could
find her. Come on, what kind of a husband are you?
You could find her on Instagram somewhere. But
gosh, I'll pull my phone out. I got you. You go along. I'll find it for you.
Anyway, Dom, hey, how you doing, Dom? This is everybody's favorite part of their Monday, right? It's Mailbag Monday. We're talking about the Brewers questions. So what's going on?
Maggie Rotino underscore realtor. You're welcome. You're out of the doghouse.
Still in there.
Awesome. Fantastic day yesterday. I actually got to hang out with the Levering family yesterday, Sunday. So that was a lovely day. Shout out to Jeff and Ashley and their kids, Brock and Logan. I had an awesome day watching the 49ers clinch a playoff spot. So that was a whole lot of fun. Shout out to Casa de Levo. And other than that, it's been pretty low-key back here in the frozen tundra, adjusting, keeping a positive attitude, to say the least. It is an adjustment for your boy right now.
I can understand. I mean, you from Phoenix, look, if anyone's never been down to the Phoenix Valley area, it's like there's a dome over the entire valley during this time of year where it's 75 degrees and perfect. Not even an insect you're going to find flying around in the air. So, I mean, for you to experience winter a little bit differently now is, my heart goes out to you.
We call it growth. That's what we call it. This is just growth, like is it. What it is. It's been great. Questions are good. We have more loose, fun ones, which is kind of what we expected in the middle of a lockout when there's not much to talk about. Really aren't updates in that regard, too. I would expect them to return to the negotiating table sometime mid-January, not anytime imminent because there are no hard deadlines, but we do have some fun questions and some questions that pertain to the actual team's construction. And I think we should start with those, Vinny.
Sure.
And this is a question that we've had already a couple times asking about Rowdy Tellez at first base. The question came from Chuck. Can Rowdy be the first baseman all year, or do you see the Brewers signing a platoon? We've answered this a few times. I think we believe the same thing, and that he is going to be given a chance to be the everyday first baseman. I have some numbers to back it up, but I don't see a scenario where he isn't the everyday first baseman, including against left-handed starters. I don't know what your take is.
At least to start as well, right? I think part of the caveat here that you need to think about is the fact that there might be a DH now, and so who then do the Brewers add to become their everyday DH, or are they going to platoon there? But I'm a little bit more bullish on Rowdy Tellez. I have been. I know a lot of people are asking this question as if it is not his job to lose. And a lot of fans think this way. We've talked about Keston Hira perhaps being like that platoon option. But I think Rowdy Tellez can hit left-handed pitching. We talked about his swing being short, compact, especially for a big guy. He's a hitter first with tremendous power. So I think, and he's never really had a chance to play every day, and he did get that chance when Daniel Vogelbach went down, and then also Keston Hira was demoted to AAA. So he did get, once he got that chance to play every day first base, he took off. He performed really well. And so at this point, I do think they believe in him as an everyday first baseman.
And going into the numbers, you know, as far as from a front office perspective, I was guilty of this. I kept forgetting what his actual. He's only going to turn 27 in spring training. He's still very young, especially at the first base position. And this coming season will be only his first season that he's arbitration eligible. So he's still got 3 more years of team control under the arbitration system. So I don't see a reason to push him away so quickly. You have him under team control. He's performed well for your team. He's had multiple huge hits last season for them. I diving in deep to his 2019 season when he played the most games, played 111 games in 2019, wasn't great. It was your traditional all slug, no hit tool, you know, hit or miss kind of thing with 21 homers, but he also had 116 strikeouts and 409 plate appearances. So basically striking out one in every 4 plate appearances, which isn't great. But this is what I found. Since 2019, he's had 452 plate appearances. He's only struck out 85 times in those 452 plate appearances. So he's cut down his strikeouts. Granted, 116 isn't a terrible number, but he's cut it down even further in more plate appearances. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does. He's a very selective hitter. And first base-wise, he plays an adequate first base. I don't think there's really anything to sniff at. He gives you enough at first base. He can scoop the heck out of the ball, too. And, you know, are you expecting him to be Paul Goldschmidt over there? No, but he gets the job done, and I don't see anything wrong with that being your starting first baseman.
He certainly doesn't look the part of a tremendous defensive first baseman. Again, I'm a little more bullish on the defense as well, Dom. I do think his hands are silky smooth over there, and he can turn the 3-6-1 double play, albeit that happens, what, every couple of weeks. But at the same time, he does, within his range, right, he doesn't have a ton of range, not a tremendous, you know, mover laterally in terms of quickness. So, but he does certainly get to the balls that are in his window there. So I like him at first base defensively as well. But bullish on Rowdy. Like him.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's what shifts are for when you don't have range. That's what shifts help you out with.
Can't wait till they eliminate it. But anyway.
Yeah, that was another question from a few weeks ago. The next question having to do with the other side of the diamond. This came from Erica. What are our thoughts on third base? Has Luis Urias earned enough trust to be the starter? I think this is a very valid question right now. Granted, I would encourage fans to go back and watch a defensive highlight reel that Luis Urias put on during the NLDS. And a reminder that this dude, now, Eduardo Escobar was supposed to be the third baseman in the playoffs. That's why you went out and got Eduardo Escobar. But not only did he go ice cold, Wicho got hot, and he proved that you could trust him with the glove. Game 4 is still my jaws on the floor, some of the plays he made in Game 4 of the NLDS in Atlanta. In my opinion, yes, Luis Urias is going to be your starting third baseman, and he should be your everyday third baseman. In the event that somebody goes down to injury, whether it's Willie or whether it's Colton, he would fill in admirably in those spots as well. There are fair question marks about his defense. And going deeper on his defense, he had 24 errors last season. 18 of them were throwing errors. It's all in the arm. So you know exactly what he needs to work on and what he's imagining. I imagine he's working on right now. It's his timing and his throwing and his mechanics with that. You fix the arm, and he's going to be a really, really good third baseman.
You said it. He makes the tremendous play because he doesn't have time to think. He's got that, I don't know if it's the thing, the yips, whatever. Obviously, that's a dirty word. In baseball, but I don't think it's full blown. I think he's battling some throwing issues with just on the routine play. Again, I think if he has some time to think, he thinks too much and the ball sails on him at times. I mean, we saw some really ugly throws from Luis Urias this year.
Yes, we did.
So I think something is in there, and I think the team probably has some contingency plans as David Stearns and Matt Arnold continue to do and construct teams around contingencies and things that could happen that they don't foresee, particularly obviously arising. And so this is one of them. I think they have a backup plan, or they will probably, to third base. Jace Peterson could be one of those options. But like you said, he's flashed the ability to really play defense. And Craig Counsell backed him continually all year in the media, saying that this guy's been tremendous. He's making strides. He's continuing to work on things. We did see two games where he made three throwing errors? Did we see that last year? Or is
this was a stat that I had actually gave to Rock on the air, in that of his 24 errors, something, I believe it was 14 of them came in seven games. You know, like it was crazy. You know, it was all at once. It all seemed to snowball. And he only made four errors September through the playoffs. So when the games mattered most, he only made four errors, which is still a bigger number than you'd like in the major leagues. But the point is, it was calming down.
Right. And I do think there is a chance for it to improve. I mean, Robin Ventura couldn't throw from third base. We didn't see the throwing problems kind of occur from third base as much as at shortstop with Luis Urias. So there could be a level of comfort for Luis Urias over at third base rather than shortstop. Maybe even at second base, he looked a little bit more comfortable throwing the baseball too. So the bat is the thing that's going to get him in the lineup. Obviously, the defense, if it's atrocious and the throwing is atrocious, he won't stay there. But you and I both kind of see that really kind of managing. He'll manage the throwing thing, I think. But the bat is the thing that's going to keep him in the lineup. And I think he's going to probably produce similar to what he did this last year with the bat. It was a little bit above average. It was he did a very, very nice job offensively.
A reminder, he's only 24 years old. You know, he's improved every year offensively with the bat, just had a career high in home runs this season, playing every day finally for the first time in his career. Going advanced on you here about third base and versus shortstop for him. UZR is an advanced analytic that basically, if you're positive, that means you're better than average. If you're negative, that means you're worse than average. He had a positive UZR at third base, and he had a negative UZR at shortstop in virtually the same amount of innings. Not the same amount of chances, but virtually the same amount of innings. So I think that's something to build upon. I do believe we'll find out very quickly if the thing, whatever he's got going on with his arm, is gone coming out of spring training, but he's got to be your third baseman. Yeah. I think you put that in Sharpie right now, unless something crazy happens.
I agree. I think Rowdy Tellez is your first baseman. Luis Urias is your third baseman to start the season.
Absolutely. Let's get ready for some fun questions, including one about you going overseas. But let me tell you about this. Let's tell you about Built Bar. Of course, you've heard me talk about it all the time. Built Bar is, you know, so delicious. It's got only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of carbs, and it's got 17 grams of protein. It's a protein bar that actually tastes good, and it's covered in 100% real chocolate, Vinny.
Yum.
Chocolate is what we're talking about here. It's like a candy bar, but it tastes better than a candy bar. It tastes so good you actually want to eat it. It's not chalky. It's not waxy. It's not like a chemical spill. You've got all these amazing flavors that taste great. Coconut almond. You've got mint brownie, salted caramel, cookies and cream, raspberry, peanut butter brownie, and so many more. Built is always coming out with new and limited time flavors as well. So you can check them out at built.com. And we've also got a promo code for you, LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15. And you're going to get 15% off at built.com. Built bars are the best. You'll want to eat healthy, but it just gets boring here in the new year, right? Maybe by like week 3, you're already thinking, you know what? This is just not worth it. Give me the chocolate. Boom. Built Bar. 100% chocolate. Other great flavors. 17 grams of protein. Only 4 grams of sugar. And only 130 calories. Built.com. Promo code LOCKED15. LOCKED15. And you're going to get 15% off at Built.com. Okay, Vinny. Question number 3 on this wonderful Mailbag Monday. And this is directed straight at you, Vinny. This is your floor right now. This comes from our friend MVP Nacho. Can you describe and compare what it's like playing overseas to the States? So I guess the way I should frame this for you is, when you first went over to Korea and played, and for those who don't know, you played in Korea, what was the biggest culture shock for you on the baseball field? Not talking about, you know, living in South Korea, but on the baseball field. What were some of the things that really shocked you from what maybe we're so used to here?
Yeah, so just to clarify, I actually played in Japan before I played in Korea. So I played in the
Oh, there you go. Even better. I should know better than that. I have a coach for my coach.
No, that's okay. I mean, the reason why I clarify is because the culture shock not the culture is not a shock. The baseball culture shock is what I'm talking about is greater in Japan than it is in the KBO in Korea. Right. So, to explain that a little bit further, so in Japan, they only care about results, right? So if you smash four line drives right at the left fielder and are 0 for 4, they are very upset, right, at you. They think you stink. They think you can't play. I'm not joking. But if you hit a 47 hopper that breaks your bat in three pieces and it chops through the infield and you get a 2 RBI single out of that hit, you are, you know, that's nice batting. That's what they say, and nice batting. And they think you're a great player. And it's just a little bit backwards from what, you know, we're taught in the States is, you know, hit the ball hard. Sometimes it goes right at them. And if you're swinging the bat, great. And you're not getting results, you're going to stay in the lineup. That's kind of the idea. In Japan, you're not going to stay in the lineup. It's a little bit like that in Korea. And so backing up, they have a very, very short leash. Similar to the major leagues, really. I mean, you got to perform right away in the major leagues. But like I said, if the process is there, if you're hitting the ball hard, if you're having great at-bats, you'll stick around in the lineup and you'll get a chance to get out of it. In Japan, not so much. Same thing in Korea. They have a little bit longer leash. They're a little bit more, just, you know, process-oriented. And I think the difference is because what I've heard was the game was taught to the Koreans by Western, it has more Western influence.
By like American coaches.
Yes. And then in Japan, it wasn't introduced, you know, it doesn't have as much Western influence in it. And then also the culture, there's a little bit of culture difference in Japan as far as that Western influence. So that was the difference. I loved it in both spots. It was a tremendous experience. And I absolutely loved it. It was different. Like I said, a little bit less different in the KBO in Korea. But I loved both spots. I would have stayed for multiple years if they would have had me, but I wasn't good enough to stick around.
You had a heck of a year in 2013 with Oryx, though. In the
minor leagues, I did. Yeah.
In the Western League,
yes,
I see.
I got sent down to the minor leagues. I pulled my hamstring right away, and that kind of got me behind the eight ball. Pulled my hamstring, and I had bone chips, so I was behind the eight ball a little bit. Hit a home run my first game playing, and I thought I was going to be the next, you know, whatever guy to really establish himself over there. And then I went like 0 for the next three games. And I'm not kidding. I was down in the minor leagues on that fourth game. It's that quick. I just tore it up in the minor leagues and then got an opportunity to play in the KBO that following year because I did so well in the minor leagues.
And he played well with Nexon, I see here too. That seemed like a fun year.
I did,
for you.
Yeah. You know what? I played with Byung Ho, Park Byung Ho. He ended up coming over and played for the Twins. I'd never seen anybody hit like this ever in my life. He hit 50 home runs and he hit with a .350 batting average, and I can't even remember how many RBIs. And then I also played with Gang. I call him Kang.
Yeah, Young Ho.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was with the Pirates. Those guys were both on my team. It was a tremendous, talented team. And that was a great year.
There's one more big leaguer on that team, by the way.
I'm trying to think.
I'm looking at the baseball reference page. Just made his big league debut this past year with the Padres.
Get out of here. Who was it?
Ha-Sung Kim.
Oh, yes. Ha-Sung he was a rookie.
Kim, utility infielder.
Of course. He was their first-round draft pick that year. That's right. That kid impressed me over there. Obviously, he did not have a great year this year for the Padres, but that was a heck of a lot of fun playing that year. I hit well, but I didn't hit enough home runs, and I also kept pulling my hamstring, so they sent me back home.
That's really insightful, though. I know next to nothing about what it's like playing over in Korea or Japan. I think it's a heck of an experience, and I've heard. Thanks to my dad getting to go to Tokyo for the A's, you know, the pre-opening day in Tokyo the last few years. Yeah. Like, they did one against the Mariners recently. They did it against the Red Sox years ago. And Ichiro's final game at the Tokyo Dome. What's it like with the fans?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just seems like, did you ever get to play a game in the Tokyo Dome with the sold-out crowd and everything?
I did. It was tremendous. I mean, it was incredible. They're on their feet the entire game doing chants and banging noisemakers together. And it's extremely loud in the stadiums and Tokyo Dome was a dome. Our dome with the Nexon Heroes, the Kyocera Dome, obviously was a dome. Those places are, they just echo and it's super loud in there. Is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's so cool. I learned a lot today from my co-host Vinny Rattino playing overseas. I think that's a great question as well from our boy Nacho from MVP Nacho. A bit more of a lighthearted question that can give us a little inside baseball here, Vinny. This one talking about, you know, hey, when what happens when a player breaks his bat and when they throw a ball into the stands? Does the player have to pay for it? That question came from Nick. I'm going to let you answer this. I think I know the answer as well, but I want you to enlighten us from what it's like in the
show. Yeah, no, the players do not pay for that. So they just throw as many balls as they want into the stands as well as their bats. I don't see a whole lot of bats going in the stands. I think there's a liability thing where they can't just...
Yeah, you can't give a broken bat to the stands anymore. They auction it off now, though. You know, you can buy those, you know, at like the community fund type table type stuff.
Yeah, so the answer is no, they don't pay for that. Yeah.
Yes, the answer is no. However, when I was a bat boy, I was very, very made very clear, hey, the players give out baseballs, not you, okay? When you get a baseball, you throw it in the bucket, okay? We go through it 12 dozen every game. We can't have the bat boy be giving them to everybody. So, all right, understood, Vuce. I got you, Vuce. Steve Vucinich. Hope you enjoy retirement, buddy. That was a fun, lighthearted question. We got a few more lighthearted questions on the way as well. But we're going to tell you about, of course, Bet Online. New year, new sports. Football playoffs are here. Packers are the number one seed. And you can bet online with Bet Online. That's where the game starts. They've got the number one spot for all the sports wagering action here in 2022, and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. You're going to get a 50% welcome. You put down $100 on your first deposit, you're going to get 50 of it right back for free thanks to the promo code LOCKEDON. Of course, football playoffs are here. National championship tonight. Hey, Vinny, who's your pick tonight? National championship, Georgia or Alabama?
Alabama, probably, yeah.
Yeah, don't bet against Nick Saban. I get it. But if you want to bet against Nick Saban, you can use Bet Online to bet against him. It's the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. Bet Online is where the game starts. I got the dogs. I'm just rooting for the dogs, personally. But, I mean, Nick Saban, it's greatness. You know, we're going to be telling a lot of people a long time what it was like watching Alabama win every single year. Okay, a few quick lighthearted questions, and then we got a really good one to wrap things up. This having to do with current and Major League Baseball. And there's one answer I'm going to eliminate from this question, okay? Who has your favorite batting stance? This question came from Jordan on the Brewers and in Major League Baseball. And no, you cannot say Craig Counsell, all right? Now give me something creative.
So wait, we gotta say two of our favorites, so one in baseball?
One Brewer and one anybody else.
Okay, stance-wise... I'm gonna say Lo Kane, and it's less about the stance, but more about his lean back follow through after he hits a bomb. I love that, and I know Rock says it every time that he's broadcasting. He watches the replay. He's calling the replay brilliantly as he does, and then he sees the lean back. And he goes, "God, I love when he does that. I love when Rock says that. It's so cool." Yeah,
that's great.
So I'm going to let you go for your Brewers guy, and then I want to do it. Yeah.
For Brewers, for me, it's Colton Wong, man. Lefty, looks like he's right there in the box, daring you. He's just got that subtle. Looks like he's holding it with, like, two fingers sometimes. Like, just very subtle, and then pop, you know, just real quick action right to the ball. I really love Colton Wong's stance. Major League Baseball, who's your favorite stance right now in the
Juan
show?
Juan Soto, because I –
That was my pick, too.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yes. I love, personally, the reason why, I want to get your reason, is because I love when he spreads out, especially with two strikes, and he's kind of just doing that shuffle as he's waiting for the pitcher to address the rubber and get the sign and go. But that's, I mean, there's just something about his stance. There's a swagger to it. There's a focus and an intensity to it. I love it.
I love Juan Soto because his swing is pure power and discipline. It's the best of both, meaning that dude knows the strike zone like nobody's business. That dude doesn't chase anything. He understands how pitchers are attacking him. He doesn't use a mega leg kick, and he's got so much pop. I'll give a quick example. I was working a game with Brian Anderson and TBS this past year. It was a Nationals Padres game for TBS. And have you ever been to Nationals Park, Vinny?
I have, yes.
Have you been to the press box at Nationals
Park? No, I have
not. Us media elites, we like to complain about Nationals Park's booths. They are on top of the Empire State Building, it feels like. You are so high up. It's really hard to judge baseball. But Juan Soto hit a ball against the Padres, batting left-handed. It looked like he just lined it the other way. Really good contact, probably a double down the line. And it wasn't just because of the booth. And watching the replay, you were like, how did this ball get out? Pure strength, pure power. He was, you know, let a fastball travel, ripped it the other way. I believe it was off Mark Melancon as well. And he lines it the other way, gets into like the third row, not a doubt of a homer. And we're like, how did that ball get out? It looked like he barely flicked at it. I love Juan Soto.
Let me just say a real.
And his stance and everything.
Yeah, let me just piggyback off that. So when I was scouting, I had the responsibility in spring training to cover the Nationals in spring training. So it's weird. It wasn't my coverage during the season, but they give you other teams to cover during spring training at times. So I watched Juan Soto take BP. He was hitting, and this was a drill that Kevin Long had him doing, and I've never seen anyone do this drill before. He was smashing line drives over the third base bag. And I can't even tell you how hard that is to do, to stay inside that baseball and hit a hard line drive literally over the third base bag. Obviously, he was working on barrel control and staying really, you know, inside the baseball. And again, controlling the barrel to hit it where he wanted to hit it. And it was inside outing balls, just smashing them. And it's kind of that what you just described kind of reminded me of that drill. So, yeah, I agree.
That's great. Yeah, he's a superstar, and it's fun to watch him play. A couple more questions here before we get out of here on this Mailbag Monday. Another lighthearted one. This one comes from Freeman Flash, and that last name gives me still a little bit of a shudder. Freeman Flash asks, what's your favorite Brewer jersey and why? I think this is super easy for me. I think I know what your answer is, but my answer is the pinstripes. Brewer block letters with the pinstripes. I think it's a great look. Reminds me of a great era. For me, it's the pinstripes. I think I know what your answer is, though.
Well, I want to know what you think my answer is going to be.
I think your answer is the powder blues.
I do love the powder blues. I do love the powder blues, but I got to say, I totally agree with what you said. The pinstripes remind me of when I was growing up watching them play at County Stadium in the 80s.
And it's over your right shoulder right now, too.
Exactly. This one.
Yep.
Yep. Backwards. It's a mirror.
For those listening on the podcast, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, right. So
yeah, they're clean.
Yeah, I love the ball. And I'm so glad they went back to the M, the B, and the ball and the glove logo. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, I love the new colors, too. It's a very subtle shift to the little bit more of a midnight blue, I believe. I really love the uniforms. I think they're really, really sharp.
I agree. They're great. An honorable mention for your favorite uniform that isn't a Brewer uniform? Mine's easy. It's the Kelly Green Oakland A's jerseys. Those are the best jerseys in baseball that aren't Brewer jerseys.
I was thinking A's. That kind of came to my head. You know what? I'm gonna talking about powder blue, the thing that was popping in my mind was the St. Louis Cardinals ones, even though we all hate the Cardinals. I do like those powder blue jerseys.
Yeah, powder blue always looks good. It always looks good. Big fan of it. Okay, I saved this question for last, Vinny, because I want to make sure I don't go too long on answering this question from Michael. He asked, you can find a stat for nearly anything these days. Do you have a favorite and a least favorite stat, and what are your favorite stats to use that best exemplify a player and a pitcher? Where do I begin, Michael? Where do I begin?
That's a tough one.
That's opening a whole clam for a statistician. That's an entire episode. I could go for hours and hours on this, but I'll simplify it. My favorite stat offensively to use is weighted runs created plus. I don't always use it on this show because I don't want to, you know, have to explain it every time I use it, but we're getting there to understand. The reason why I love weighted runs created plus is because it's equalized across eras and across ballparks. So you can grade Nolan Arenado at Coors Field against Ted Williams in 1947 at Fenway Park. That's the beauty of this stat. Now, no stat is perfect. I understand that. But this does its best, and it's easy to understand. 100, average. Anything above 100, you're above average. Anything below 100, you're below average. I think that's the beauty of weighted runs created plus, in my opinion, for an offensive player. For a pitcher, I like to use FIP, fielding independent pitching. You grade it just like you would grade ERA, so lower the better. Basically, it makes the pitcher, you know, not as responsible for bad defense behind him or bloop singles, things like that, but he is responsible for home runs, things that he can control, walks, strikeouts, things like that. So if a guy has a really, really low FIP but a really high earned run average, that may mean he has bad defense or he's got bad luck with bloop hits behind him, and vice versa. If a guy has a really high FIP but somehow a lower ERA, it means probably most of his runs are coming via walks or via home runs. So that's where I go for the ones I love. Now, you as a scout, Vinny, and someone who's analyzed the game for a long time, are there a few that you found yourself falling to aside from the basic three?
Yeah, so basically, I think as a scout, I really tried to dig in deep on this stuff and really tried to learn. I always found myself going back to OPS, strikeout percentage, and walk percentage. You can also go to slugging as well, but I like I said, I'm telling you what I did. I don't know if it was perfect, if it was a perfect system, but I found myself going to OPS because that'll tell you the story about whether or not they were slugging the baseball and getting on base. Obviously, it's on base plus slugging. And then the strikeout to walk ratio was huge, right? So those are numbers that are sticky, they say. When a player is very young in A-ball, it tends to stick around, hence sticky, for their career. And so I looked at those. Again, I don't know if that's a tough question. What are my favorites? But those are my go-tos. Again, I'm always trying to learn and trying to figure out if there's a better system or a better way to kind of really get a snapshot of what a player is analytically. And then for pitching, I went to strikeouts and walks. That's all I did, strikeout and walk percentage. So major league average is
what they can control.
Is about 25%. For strikeouts in this day and age, and then it's about 8% for walks, just so fans are kind of educated on that. And if anything was above or below, but then there's also the caveat there, if a guy is having a lot of success like Adrian Hauser was, you got to look at ground ball percentage, and the strikeout percentage isn't there, I should say. You got to go ahead and look at ground ball percentage, and if it's something above 45%, then that's a really good ground ball percentage. So I have a couple of my least favorites, but I'll let you go for it.
Go for it.
I just lost my train of thought on that. Do you have – let me think about that.
I hate war. Now, war is very, very useful, and I give kudos to Bill James and Tom Tango and everybody that's helped create these amazing war. Here's the thing people need to understand about war. There's three different types. Yeah. Okay, you got baseball reference war, you've got Fangraphs war, and you've got baseball perspective warp. Okay, each one values defense a little bit differently. The way that they calculate it is only slightly different, but it explains why you have such big disparities for guys like Yadier Molina, for instance, right? He's penalized in baseball reference war, but rewarded in Fangraphs war because of his defense, right? Because defense is graded a little bit differently between the two sites. But another stat I hate, aside from war, I think people have misconstrued war for it being a tell-all stat if a guy is better than another. If a guy is a 2.5 war and another guy is a 2.2 war, they're virtually the same player, okay? I need people to understand that. Now, if a guy's a 6.2 war and another guy's a 1.2 war, yes, that's where there's a disparity. But also, you don't need war to tell you that. You could probably use other stats to let you know why that guy is better. Another stat that I hate, and this is where I'll end it, is the framing stats, because it's so subjective. And I know we want to quantify everything, but until, you know, the strike zone is consistent, which will never be until there's a computerized strike zone, then we don't have framing. Just because a guy doesn't get a called strike on a pitch that's actually a ball doesn't mean he's a bad framer. Okay, it's a pitch was supposed to be a ball. It's going to be called a ball. They're good umpires. A lot of the umpires are good umpires. You shouldn't be penalized for not getting something that is supposed to be called a ball, for literally bending the rules. That's just my opinion. I'm sick of us grading based on framing when understanding, like, yes, there are guys that are really good at it, including Omar Narvaez. But I'm sick of us penalizing guys for sometimes just not your night, as far as the umpire zone is super tight and they get hurt for that. It's too subjective and it changes night to night. I don't like
framing
stats.
And it's dependent on your pitching staff. What if you have a great pitching staff? Umpires are creatures of habit and they want to call strikes.
Yes.
Right? So if you got a staff pounding the zone, your catcher is going to get a more favorable framing grade. People don't understand.
The Maddox effect.
Yeah, exactly. So the stat that I do not like, and this is where I was going with this, is exit velocity, believe it or not. I don't like exit velocity. I hate – so, and this kind of jumped out at me when I was scouting a game. It was at Miller Park at the time. It was called Miller Park at the time. Lorenzo Cain had like a 12-pitch at-bat. This was in 2019. He lines a line drive into right field, and it drops in front of the right fielder. Exit velocity of like 87 miles an hour, right? They were playing the San Francisco Giants. They get out of the inning. Up comes the third baseman for the – why am I blanking on his name? Evan Longoria. Yeah.
For the Giants? Okay, Longoria.
Longoria,
yeah.
19. Hits a four-hopper to the shortstop. Routine as it gets. It could have – it was probably – it wouldn't even have hurt his hand when he fielded the ground ball, but it was 100 miles an hour off the bat. So – I think it's a worthless stat. I think they should do exit velocity when it crosses the infield, and I do think that they do that. I do think stat. I think the analytics departments do measure that. I think that is a more useful stat than the exit velocity off the bat, because I think ground balls, you can take a bad swing and you can kind of manipulate the barrel to get that barrel on the baseball, and it shoots off the bat. It was a bad swing. You rolled over it, and it rewarded you with a high exit velo. Whereas then low cane, great piece of hitting, not rewarded. It was actually a below average exit velo. So that's why I do not like exit velo.
Very fair. Michael, you got us going on that question, man. We could keep going on this. But this has already been a really long mailbag Monday. But really fun questions, as always, Mr. Rutino. Got anything fun planned this week? Oh. Anything? I know you got some sun coming up in your future, hopefully.
I do. So I'm going to head down to Florida, play a little golf. Fort Myers. Yeah.
Love it. You're going to pull a Dom. You're going to, remote in.
We'll have to remote in next Monday. I'm leaving Thursday, coming back Monday. So I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait.
All right, man. I love it. Thanks to all of you for listening on this edition of Locked On Brewers. Don't forget to like on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Drop us a rating, drop us a review if you really like it. We got more content coming. We're just waiting for baseball to start again, guys. We are 80 days until opening day, and I believe we will start opening day on time. 80 days. We're almost there. We can get through the winter, man. Just keep liking, following, subscribing, interacting with us. We really do appreciate every single one of you guys dropping us some questions here for Mailbag Monday. We've got a really fun guest coming up for Interrogation Tuesday, and then another episode coming later this week with Throwback Thursday. This will all be teased on social, so make sure you're following us at Locked On Brewers. He's Vinny Rutino. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for listening or watching on YouTube, and we'll see you guys tomorrow for Interrogation Tuesday.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.